Good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. On tonight's program, we'll have some follow-ups on what we talked about last night about Dr. Wakefield's study regarding autism being disavowed by The Lancet. There's more to the story than that. I can't begin to tell how many emails I got today. But a couple I picked up. I don't want to get into a discussion about it again, but there's some stuff that that I want to share with you. Also, the latest from the Pig Man, which is kind of funny. What else we got? A poll was conducted. It was paid for by Daily Kos, and it was conducted by the hell is the name of the polling company? Research 2000, which is a respectable polling institution. You're going to be surprised, or maybe not, at what this poll found out. Just a whole lot of stuff to talk about tonight. So sit back and fasten your seatbelt. The first one here is, I want to get started with this. You remember when the madness surrounding the report of the so-called Christmas underwear bomber. Remember all that? Farouk Abdulmutallab? And when that happened, we were off the air. We were off the air for a week over, you know, right after Christmas. I guess it happened on Christmas Day. We did not have a program. We didn't come back until January 3rd. And by then, the story had been this way and that way and this way and that way. But one of the first things I remember talking about was, you know, this can't be happening again. This is not a failure of intelligence. This is deliberate. This was an effort, just like the 9/11 attack on this country. This was engineered one way or the other, either by looking the other way or organizing it from the get-go in order to go after Barack Obama. Now, We talked about it, or I talked about it, because I don't think I took a lot of calls that night. But I talked about my suspicions that something stunk badly about this story, how this guy got through. Now, the first reports turned out to be wrong. He did have, I was quoting various news sources, that he didn't have a visa to the United States, that he did not have a round-trip ticket, that he did not have any money, yada, yada, yada. Most of that turned out to be not true. That was stuff that was forced into the press by people who apparently engineered this event to begin with. So that turned out not to be true. Of course he had a visa. Of course he had this. Of course he had that. So in the first reporting of the story, nobody could get it straight because false information was being fed into the news stream. And it was being picked up by everybody. Legitimate news organizations like ABC, NBC, CBS, and phony organizations like Fox. Everybody was reporting the same thing. And then, after it calmed down a little bit, then it fell back in the usual pattern of the right-wing crazy people in this country attacking Obama policies or finding something like these ravenous dogs always do. Well, now that we are, 6 weeks away from the story, Alex Lantier, writing at WSWS.org today, has something very interesting that the rest of the media either are ignoring or haven't gotten to it yet. And that's the story around this hearing on January 27th. When was that? Last week. Hearing of the House Committee on Homeland Security. That hearing established that U.S. intelligence agencies stopped the State Department from revoking the U.S. visa of Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab. Let me say it again. U.S. intelligence agencies stopped the State Department from revoking the visa. That would have kept him off the plane, out of the United States. U.S. intelligence agencies stopped the State Department. The State Department, headed by Hillary Clinton, an Obama appointee, and within the State Department, there are, of course, many appointees who came to work for Hillary Clinton and, by extension, Barack Obama. But within the U.S. Intelligence Department, don't forget, the U.S. Intelligence Department in all its various faces and names, has been salted with Bush-Cheney appointees who became permanent employees by virtue of changing their job classification over to civil service. The U.S. intelligence agencies also are chock-a-block with Israeli sympathizing agents. These are all right-wingers, whether they are right-wing sympathizers in this country, they want to see this country go fascist, or if they are sympathizers with the apartheid state that it's is developing in Israel. It doesn't really make too much difference. These guys are all on the same page. And if you need verification of that, go back and check who the founders were and the ruling council of the Project for a New American Century. And this new one that we talked about the other night, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, FDD, I believe it goes by. And look at the names, and look at where their alliances and allegiances lie. Look at who they are. It's the same group. You remember the particulars. Abdul Muttalab, Nigerian student. Supposedly affiliated with the Yemeni terrorist group Al-Qaeda in the Arab Peninsula, AQAP, tried to set off a bomb on Northwest Flight 253 into Detroit on Christmas Day. Now, revocation of that visa would have prevented him from boarding the airplane. Very simple. And that's what the State Department tried to do, no visa. And the U.S. intelligence agencies overrode how, I have no damn idea, but maybe we can get to it here, overrode the decision by the United States State Department. Now, the hearing before Congress, House Committee on Homeland Security last week on the 27th, that didn't get any press. The hearing was reported, however, in a brief article posted January 27th on the website of the Detroit News, obviously, since this guy was heading for Detroit. The headline said, "Terror suspect kept visa to avoid tipping off larger investigation." Now, that was the headline on the Detroit News newspaper website, same day as the hearing by the House Committee on Homeland Security. So the revelation that U.S. intelligence agencies made a decision, a deliberate decision, to allow Abdul Muttalab to board a commercial flight without any special airport screening, all of that's been buried in the media. Have you heard about it? And as Alex Lantier writes, as of this writing, nearly a week after the hearing, the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, and LA Times have published no articles on the subject, nor have the broadcast or cable television media reported on it. Nothing. Nothing. Now, the official line about this story strained credulity from the outset. You know that. Given the fact that there, remember, multiple reports, multiple advance warnings that this student was linked to terrorists in Yemen who were planning attacks on the United States. Everybody in the State Department, in the U.S. intelligence agencies, and probably in the higher levels of the U.S. military knew about this guy. And it was widely reported within hours of this failed bombing attempt that Abdul Muttalab's father, former Nigerian government minister and banker, went to the U.S. Embassy in Abuja, in Nigeria, in November to warn that his son was involved with radical Islamists in Yemen, broken off contact with his family. The family said they had given U.S. officials extensive information about their son in the expectation that U.S. Officials would find him and send him home to them. Stick around. What happens next, I think you're going to find kind of hair-raising. On the first, that's why I'm spitting cyanide each and every verse. I see the Carlisle group and Harris bank accounts. I see them plead the fifth each and every session now. Cause America's been took, it's plain to see. The oldest trick in the book is make an enemy. A phony evil so the government can do its dirt. And take away your freedom, lock and load, beat and search. Oil, blood, money make these killers ride cold. Suspicious suicide, people dying never told. It's all a part of playing God, so you think we need them. While being Ashcroft, take away your rights to freedom. Bear witness to the sickness of these dictators. Hope you understand the time, brother, cause it's major. What would you do if you do?
Time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. The House Committee on Homeland Security hearing on January 27th, nobody is talking about it. The hearing established that U.S. intelligence agencies stopped the State Department from revoking the visa of Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab, the so-called underwear bomber. In his prepared statement to the House Committee on Homeland Security on January 27th, State Department Undersecretary for Management Patrick Kennedy said, quote, "In the case of Abdulmutallab, on the day following his father's November 19th visit to the embassy, we sent a cable to the Washington intelligence and law enforcement community through proper channels that information suggests Abdulmutallab may be involved in Yemeni-based extremists," end quote. Now, under questioning by the committee chairman, Representative Benny Thompson, Kennedy explained why the State Department might not revoke the U.S. visa of a suspected terrorist. He said, quote, "We will revoke the visa of any individual who is a threat to the United States, but we do take one preliminary step. We ask our law enforcement and intelligence community partners, do you have eyes on this person? Do you want us to let this person proceed under your surveillance so that you may potentially break a bigger plot?" Kennedy added, quote, "And one of the members of the intelligence community, and we'll be glad to give you that out of open session, in private said, quote, please do not revoke this visa. We have eyes on this person. We are following this person who has the visa for the purpose of trying to roll up an entire network, not just stop one person," end quote. Now, that quote was given to Kennedy, a State Department employee, by someone who he will not know a name in open session in the intelligence community. Under questioning by Representative Dan Lundgren, Kennedy confirmed that Abdulmutallab's case was one in which U.S. intelligence officials had interceded to make sure that this guy kept his visa, to make sure that he could get on board that plane without a thorough check, to make sure that he came to Detroit. Alex Lantier goes on. In prepared remarks at the same hearing, National Counterterrorism Center Director Michael Lantier stated, quote, "Within the intelligence community, we had strategic intelligence that Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, AQAP, that's the terrorist group in Yemen with which Abdulmutallab was in contact, that they had the intention of taking action against the United States prior to the failed attack on December 25th. But we did not direct more resources against AQAP, nor insist that watch listing criteria be adjusted prior to the event," end quote. He added that U.S. intelligence analysts, quote, "did not push Abdulmutallab onto the terrorist watch list," end quote. Now, this inaction came despite the fact that U.S. intelligence agencies were well aware of the threat posed by AQAP, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. According to Leiter, quote, "the intelligence community highlighted the growing threat to U.S. and Western interests in the region posed by AQAP, whose precursor elements attacked our embassy in the Yemeni capital, Sana'a, in September 2008. Our analysis focused on AQAP's plans to strike U.S. targets in Yemen, but it also noted increasingly in the fall of 2009 the possibility of targeting the United States," end quote. Now, what this guy is saying is that the U.S. intelligence agency chock-a-block, peppered, salted, embedded with right-wing American terrorists. Terrorists in the sense that they want to see this country attacked again in order to bring about a complete and immediate takeover by the hard right. That they, those elements within the U.S. intelligence community, ordered the State Department, no, let this guy through. Let this guy through. So official testimony now records that U.S. intelligence agencies deliberately let Abdulmutallab board Flight 253, putting the lives of hundreds of passengers at risk in the course of his as yet undisclosed, quote, intelligence operation, end quote. Whether U.S. agencies were unaware of Abdulmutallab's plans or consciously decided to allow an attack to proceed, at this point, remains unclear. But there's more. There's more. Why? Why would they do this? Why would U.S. intelligence agencies, who had all this information on this guy, knew that he was a young, impressionable follower of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, who was hell-bent on his own personal martyrdom and taking out hundreds of people with him, why would they continue to stand in the way and allow him to get on board this jetliner? I'll give you the answer when we come back.
They've been carefully selected by partisan appointees who themselves were not elected. They hold top-level meetings at undisclosed locations to suspend the Constitution and sustain the corporation. Their minutes, notes, and memos can't be shared. And by the way, does anybody know the current whereabouts?
Microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So what we're talking about here, on January 27th, there was a hearing before the House Committee on Homeland Security. And at that hearing, it was established that U.S. intelligence agencies stopped the State Department from pulling the visa of Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab, which had the net effect of allowing this guy, this 25-year-old Nigerian, who had been totally radicalized, if you believe the official story, this is what we're going on, by Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, AQAP. U.S. intelligence agencies knew the risk. The State Department knew the risk. For some reason, the State Department defers to U.S. intelligence agencies. So this guy got on board with enough explosive, had he done it right, to murder however many people were on that jetliner and however many people on the ground who were killed as parts of this huge airliner fell into their homes or their cars or what have you. The U.S. intelligence agency set this up to happen. That's a matter of congressional testimony now. Now, going back just a moment here, official testimony now records, and this is Alex Lantier at WSWS.org today. Official testimony now records that U.S. intelligence deliberately let Abdulmutallab board Flight 253, putting the lives of hundreds of people at risk in the course of an as yet undisclosed intelligence operation. Now, here's a key sentence. Whether U.S. agencies, intelligence agencies, were unaware of Abdulmutallab's plans. What do you think the odds are? I mean, they're the ones that said, let him on board. Or consciously decided to allow an attack to proceed remains unclear. However, in this context, it should be noted that the reason given at the hearing for U.S. inaction was that U.S. intelligence did not want to alert Al-Qaeda that it was watching Abdulmutallab. That explanation does not hold water. As Congressman noted during the hearing, U.S. Customs and Border Protection had prepared to interrogate Abdulmutallab upon arrival in Detroit, as he was on the Terrorist Identities Data Mart Environment Database. Now, that interview would have been counterproductive if U.S. agencies were mounting a concerted effort to hide their interest in him. So there's the lie. U.S. Customs and Border Protection is now under the control of the Homeland Security Department. Homeland Security Department works hand in glove with intelligence agencies. The intelligence agencies had every reason to stop this guy, or at least not to interfere when the State Department decided to pull his visa. But they went to the State Department and said, let him fly. There are a number of possible explanations for the decision to allow Abdulmutallab to board Northwest Flight 253. One possibility is that it was bound up with efforts by elements within the U.S. intelligence agencies to politically destabilize the Obama administration. To politically destabilize the Obama administration. Now remember, look back over the past year, the past 16 months, ever since it became apparent that Obama was going to be president. Look at the concerted, full-throated, multi-pronged attack against Obama. Basically because he's not white. To seriously investigate the possible motivations behind the government's inaction or action here, the question has to be asked. What would have been the consequences of a successful attack? Supposing this kid would, and I refer to him as a kid because I'm older than he is. What if he would have been able to put his elements of this bomb together and has succeeded? What were the possible consequences? Hysterical media coverage would have provided fodder for the most right-wing factions in the ruling class to demand war against Yemen or other Muslim countries. At home, there would have been calls for a mass dragnet like that after the September 11th attacks, immense political pressure for a new battery of police state laws. Detroit. Do you know how many people of Arab descent live in Detroit? Tens of thousands. Now, even having failed, the attack was used as a pretext for expanding U.S. military operations in Yemen, for adding further security restrictions at airports, for expanding the no-fly passenger list and other databases by agencies unaccountable to the American people. The testimony at the January 27th hearing before Congress also blows to pieces the line put out there by the establishment media, which universally echo the administration's phrase to explain the Flight 253 incident, that it was a, quote, failure to connect the dots on the part of U.S. intelligence agencies. Now, that, of course, is the same phrase used in the official cover-up of the 9/11 attacks. Aren't you getting tired of it? Efforts by elements within the U.S. intelligence apparatus to politically destabilize the Obama administration, and not stop there, to destabilize the entire country. What would have happened, truth seeker? Had this terror act succeeded? And every indication is that there are elements within the U.S. intelligence community who wanted just that. Too far-fetched? I beg to differ. Let's not forget Operation Northwoods. You don't know what that is? Google it. And you don't have to go back 45 years. How about the events of September 11th, 2001? Or do you still believe that 19 guys with box cutters managed to defeat the most sophisticated military operation in the history of the human race? In a January 2nd editorial entitled, Why Didn't They See It?, the New York Times wrote, quote, no doubt sorting through heaps of information and determining what is urgent or even worthy of follow-up is daunting. Still, it is incredible and frightening that the government cannot do at least as good a job at swiftly updating and correlating information as Google, end quote. The government? But wait a second. New York Times? Testimony? Subsequent to your editorial proved that it was not the government. The government, which is shorthand for the Obama administration, the government tried to stop this guy from getting his visa. The State Department said, no, this guy is a direct threat to the United States. The intelligence agency said, wait, we're working on something bigger. Let him through. The Times itself, New York Times, in a subsequent article published January 18th, a week before the hearings, reported the results of its own investigation based on interviews with senior White House and intelligence officials. The newspaper revealed more so-called missed clues, including the fact that intelligence authorities learned in early November from a communication intercept of al-Qaeda's followers in Yemen that a man named Omar Farouk. What's this guy's name? Omar Farouk Mutalab. Abdul Mutalab. Intelligence authorities learned in early November that a man named Omar Farouk had volunteered for a coming operation despite such evidence of an official cover-up. The Times, New York Times, maintains the line that the near disaster was the result of mistakes, omissions, or an inability to connect the dots. So is it possible now to answer the New York Times editorial of January 2nd that they did see it, and that the New York Times' incredulous and cynical attempt to explain the Flight 253 attack as a result of mere incompetence is part of a larger campaign of disinformation? Huh? You gotta wonder if that's the case because of the silence from the New York Times since that January 27th hearing. Nobody has said a damn thing. Have you heard anything? Have you read anything in mainstream media? Anywhere in the media? Have you? I haven't. In the January 18th New York Times article that I just mentioned, the newspaper also noted that Obama personally met on December 22nd with CIA, FBI, and Department of Homeland Security officials because Obama was, quote, worried about possible terror attacks over the Christmas holiday, end quote. In another meeting the same day, the New York Times reported Obama's Homeland Security advisor, John Brennan, held talks on Yemen, quote, where a stream of disturbing intelligence had suggested that Qaeda operatives were preparing for some action, perhaps a strike on an American city on Christmas Day, end quote. Had enough? There's a little more.
Voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. January 27th hearing before the House Committee on Homeland Security established that the U.S. intelligence agencies were the ones who, operatives within the U.S. intelligence agencies were the ones that prevailed upon the U.S. State Department to allow Abdul Mutalab to board the airplane, to not pull his visa, to let him come through. The lie being, well, we're checking him out because of a bigger operation, and we don't want anyone to disturb the operation. And yet, plans were that when he landed, One of the divisions of the Department of Homeland Security that deals closely with U.S. intelligence was poised to question him about all the information that had been gathered about this guy. Everybody knew who he was, what he was connected with. Now, to repeat, in the January 18th New York Times article, the newspaper also noted that Obama personally met on December 22nd with CIA, FBI, and DHS officials because Obama was worried about possible terrorist attacks over the Christmas holiday. That's a direct quote from the New York Times. In another meeting the same day, December 22nd, the Times reported that Obama's Homeland Security Advisor, John Brennan, held talks on Yemen, quote, where a stream of disturbing intelligence had suggested that Qaeda operatives were preparing for some action, perhaps a strike, on an American city on Christmas Day, end quote. There it is. Nevertheless, Barack Obama gave a December 28th internet and radio address 3 days after this guy failed to ignite his bomb, in which Obama described Abdulmutallab as, quote, an isolated extremist, end quote. That is a lie. Obama also declared in that same December 28th radio address, quote, a full investigation has been launched into this attempted act of terrorism, and we will not rest until we find all who were involved and hold them accountable. We will continue to use every element of our national power to disrupt, to dismantle, and defeat the violent extremists who threaten us, end quote. God, that sounds familiar, doesn't it? Over a month after Obama made these claims, it is clear that U.S. intelligence agencies were deeply involved, and the Obama administration is overseeing a massive cover-up. And you've got to ask yourself the question, why? A cover-up can be many things. It can be a failure to conduct a proper investigation. It can be being in the unenviable position, as President of the United States, of being told or finding out or realizing that there is a silent coup occurring in this country. And what is he going to do about it? Barack Obama is going to do nothing. Don't you wish that Barack, because I do, wish that Barack Obama would call one of his press conferences or address to the American people 9 o'clock Eastern time next week and declare, ladies and gentlemen, fellow citizens, it is perfectly clear to anyone who holds beyond a fourth grade education that there are elements within the U.S. intelligence community that are hell-bent on destroying this country. And they're setting me up for the fall. And then told the truth about what he knows about the Christmas bomber. I had a thought today when I watched some of the video where Obama is addressing Democrats, the Democrat congressional group. And I had the thoughts because I was watching Obama's facial expressions and his body language. His answers were really, he might as well have been talking to fence posts. But his body language and his facial expression gave me the opinion that he is just about 3 or 4 centimeters from saying, you know, to hell with this. To hell with this. Every single attempt to destabilize this government, assassinate the president, blow up American cities, provide lies through Fox News Channel, and now ABC, CBS, and NBC, the New York Times, the Washington Post. Why does this man stay in power? And don't send me an email and say, well, he's part of the plot. Oh, hog snot. I don't know what Obama is, but I will guarantee you that he's not part of some capitalist corporatist takeover of the country. That started 30 years ago. Failure to connect the dots. Now, when you heard that, come on. You know when you heard that, just like when I heard it, you went, oh, here we go again. Here we, by God, go again. A failure to connect the dots. Multi-billions upon billions of dollars spent before 2001. Billions more spent subsequent to that attack. And we are into the National Intelligence Services. And we are to believe. We are to believe. Now, I'm sorry, but here it comes. Son of a bitch, we're to believe that it was another failure of intelligence to connect the dots? Do you see how serious the attack on this country is? These pigs at Fox News are just a small element, although an effective one. Do you see how serious it is? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. You're listening to the Malloy program. Now, I'm going to give you the address, the web address, so you can get both the transcript of that hearing and also of the House Homeland Security Committee hearing, and also watch and listen to audio video of that hearing. I'll give it to you in a second if you want to get something to write with, just so you don't think I'm going all Alex Jones on you. Now, there's one more thing that I want to toss out here for your consideration, and it comes from Cap Mary in Memphis. Here it is. Senator Mary Landrieu chairs the Senate's Homeland Security Committee. The hearing I'm referring to on January 27th was in the House, but Senator Mary Landrieu, Louisiana, chairs the Senate's Homeland Security Committee. Why is that important? Remember the four guys who were arrested January 27th while the House hearings were going on? Busted trying to bug Mary Landrieu's phone. Now, I told you last week about Stanley Dye, or was it this week? One of the four. Stanley Dye, whose connections to the U.S. intelligence community for a guy 24 are astonishing. But there they are. Now, remember, the break-in at Watergate was a third-rate burglary, right? And it led to revelations that showed how a sick, mentally unbalanced president was doing his part, even before Reagan, to move this country into a totalitarian state. And the right wing figured out, well, we can't do that again. Let's get an amiable dunce. Let's get Reagan. And let's plan on this is going to take a few years. So here we have four guys caught trying to bug the phones of the Senate Homeland Security Committee chairperson. Why? Well, the cover story is because they wanted to find out why Senator Landrieu was not responding to her constituents regarding what? Healthcare? Jesus God. And all, what's today, Wednesday? Was it last week or the first part of this week? We were talking, or I was talking about Stanley Dye, one of the four, his deep connections to the U.S. and Israeli intelligence. Is there dots to be connected, or are there dots to be connected there? Nah. Not a bit. And if you attempt to connect the dots, why, you're a tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorist. Why would anybody with deep connections to U.S. intelligence be trying to bug the phones of the Senate Homeland Security Committee chairperson while at the very same time, hearings were going on before the House Homeland Security Committee. Maybe to find out what kind of information was being shared from the House to the Senate to prepare for Senate hearings by the same committee or a committee, that oversees the same thing only from the Senate side. What do you think, Truth Seeker? Or is that just a little bit too tinfoil hat? Ish even for you? Or is it just as plain as the nose on your face? But remember, if it's not reported in the news, if it's not on television, it doesn't exist. It never happened. Television is a reverse memory hole. Winston Smith had to actually remove historical documents and photographs and transcripts and articles and flush them away. Don't have to do that with television. All you do is don't report it. Just don't report it. And if it shows up in the New York Times, the Washington Post, who reads New York Times? Who reads the Washington Post? And if the New York Times and the Washington Post and the L.A. Times and whatever newspapers of record are still operating, and all of them are in dire financial trouble, aren't they? It's getting to the point now we're very close to having web content require your paying to see what the New York Times has up on the website and the Post and all the newspapers. Got to do it because, you know, the economy's busted, right? I think it's time, I don't know, we can do what George Lakoff says and start organizing, or we can not. Stanley Dye and the Acorn Pimpster O'Keefe. And somebody sent me some a tape from this psychopath Joe Scarborough's program in the morning on MSNBC, where a plagiarist, what's his name? Who's the guy? Damn it. I'll have it for you in a second. Mike Barnicle, who is a regular on that program. Plagiarist Mike Barnicle tries to defend James, what was the guy's name? James O'Keefe. Tries to defend him as an investigative journalist. Mike Barnicle tries to paint this little punk as an investigative journalist. No, he's not. He's the dumbass. He's the fall guy. He's the estupido. He's the schmuck. While Stanley Dye, the intelligence operator, does the real work of that whole break-in. So just keep that in mind. Senator Mary Landrieu chairs the Senate's Homeland Security Committee. Her office was invaded on January 27th while the investigations were going on in the House Homeland Security Committee. Just coincidence? Why, of course. Why, of course. Oh, yeah, and last Friday, this is from the Feingold, Russ Feingold Senate Committee. Last Friday, the thug Rush Limbaugh compared Russ Feingold to terrorist Osama bin Laden on the Pigman's radio program. According to Melissa Ryan, who's with the Feingold Senate Committee. I'll get it right. Try English. That always works better for you, Malloy. Melissa Ryan with the Feingold Senate Committee sent out this press release. Limbaugh said the Al-Qaeda leader, most recent audio tape, which you and I know is a damn fake. And this is what Limbaugh said. Sounds like this could easily have been said by Russ Feingold, the senator from Wisconsin. You see why Rush Limbaugh is paid $30 million a year, or is it 50? Do you see how valuable Rush Limbaugh is? And Sean Hannity, and Glenn Beck, and Bill O'Reilly. Do you understand how valuable they are? Jesus, God. I don't know, man. I don't know. I've got some more stuff here for you. You got to stick around. We have a break. It's just getting crazier and crazier and crazier. What was this poll last week that 46% of Americans say, the vast majority in the poll, a plurality, but the majority in the poll say that the most reliable news source in America is Fox News. I read today in the New York Times that Avatar, distributed by 20th Century Fox, part of the News Corporation, part of Murdoch's empire, is bringing in hundreds of millions of dollars into the coffers of Rupert Murdoch. I also read that every single aspect of Murdoch's publishing media operation is showing a tremendous profit, way better than last year, and the leading profit center in Murdoch's empire is Fox News Channel.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Ron writes, Malloy, do you remember a few years ago that case involving some investigative reporters for a Fox TV station in South Florida who were fired for refusing to doctor the report about, as I recall, the Monsanto company? Their bosses kept telling them to rewrite the report, and they did, I think dozens of times, before they finally put their foot down and said, no, we won't lie. Then the station fired them, and they sued. They won a big judgment, and the station appealed. In the appeal, the station defended itself by asserting its right to lie on the air. They said they are under no legal obligation to tell the truth in their on-air reports, and they won a reversal of the original verdict on the strength of that defense. Think about this now. Fox News, quote, quote, actually admits that their news reports are often outright lies. They actually admit that their news reports are worthless. This is a fact that we should be shouting from all the rooftops about the propaganda that comes from Fox News stations. Ron. Yeah, but Ron, nobody cares. Now, how about this? That was then. This is now. This is from FoxNews.com. A federal law against lying about military medals is facing First Amendment challenges in Colorado and California. Now think about this. Lawyers in both cases have made similar arguments against what is referred to as the Stolen Valor Act, saying that lying is protected by the First Amendment unless it does real harm. In California, a judge rejected a motion to dismiss a charge against Xavier Alvarez of falsely claiming he received the Medal of Honor, the nation's highest military decoration. Alvarez is appealing on free speech grounds. And in Colorado, Richard Glenn Strandloff is awaiting trial on charges of falsely claiming he received a Purple Heart and Silver Star. He pleaded not guilty. The judge hasn't ruled on motions in that case raising the free speech argument. Do you get what's going on? The Supreme Court rules 5-4 that corporations have First Amendment protections. The Florida Supreme Court ruled a couple of years ago that Fox News has a right to lie on air anytime it wants to. And now there are two court challenges, one in California and one in Colorado, two court challenges against the Stolen Valor Act saying, hey, wait a minute. You're infringing on my free speech rights. I can walk around saying I have the Congressional Medal of Honor, whether it's true or not. And if it's not true, you can't stop me. Freedom of speech. Now, this was at FoxNews.com. I can imagine how all the chicken hawks over at Fox News are just salivating. Oh, God, I'll wait a couple of months and then remind people that I got a Silver Star when I was in the military. Fox News is making a tremendous profit in the United States. And it's destroying the country. Now, is that too tinfoil hattish, huh? You slime balls that are listening to this program, that listen to Fox News or watch it on television? Do you have any problem with that? How about all you veterans? How about all you men, mostly, and women, to a lesser degree, who call yourselves Republicans and conservatives? Oh, yeah, because Barack Obama was born in Kenya, you know. And you served in the military. And maybe you got a Purple Heart. Maybe you even got a battle commendation, not just Purple Heart, but a battle commendation. Maybe you did. All of a sudden now, do you know what your medal is worth? Nothing! Because now any teabagger can get up there with a whole chest full of medals, and he is protected, or she is protected by First Amendment. If the judges rule the way the judge in Florida ruled, you have a right to lie. Few results in a Daily Kos poll that is really kind of shaking up the blogosphere when we come back. Daily Kos commissioned Research 2000 to survey more than 2,000 self-identified Republicans last month. Site founder Marcos Melitzis, the Kos in Daily Kos, called the results, quote, nothing short of startling. Stick around. I'll share it with you when we come back. Some of the highlights or lowlights, whatever you want to call it. Well, by the way, have I told you that I was in Vietnam? I was with the First Air Cav. No, I wasn't at My Lai. But, yeah, we saw some pretty intense combat, so much so that I got 3 Silver Stars and 2 Purple Hearts. I'll tell you about it sometime.
radio right. From the left, it's More Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. So, Marcos Melitzas, Daily Kos, had a commissioned a poll taken by Research 2000 to survey more than 2,000 self-identified Republicans last month. And the results are being called nothing short of startling. Here's a few nuggets from the poll. 21% of Republicans believe that Acorn stole the 2008 election. 55% aren't sure. That means 76% of Republicans either believe Acorn stole the election, Acorn, or they're not sure. 31% believe Obama is a racist who hates white people, and 33% aren't sure. That's 64% of Republicans either think Obama's a racist or they're not sure. 23% of Republicans want their state to secede from the United States, and 19% aren't sure. That's 42% of Republicans either want to secede or, I don't know, maybe. 74% favor preventing, 74% of Republicans favor preventing openly gay Americans from serving in the military. 67% of Republicans believe the only way to get to, quote, heaven, end quote, is through, quote, Jesus Christ, end quote. Now, Politico's Ben Smith said the poll was conducted, quote, more or less with the goal of making Republicans look extreme, end quote, and, quote, does a pretty good job of that, end quote. But Daily Kos responded today by saying, quote, actually, the poll just asked questions of self-identified Republicans. The answers made Republicans look extreme. Charles Johnson on Little Green Footballs, are you familiar with that website? Of course you are. He says, quote, if this poll is accurate, and Research 2000 has a good reputation for accuracy, the Republican base has an absurdly high percentage of wackos of all stripes, from religious fanatics to creationists to secessionists to conspiracy theorists, end quote. Only the conspiracies they believe in, of course, are the ones that are absolutely based in smoke. Republicans believe that Obama stole the election, was born in Kenya, and all non-Christians are going to hell. Oh, my God. Now, there were some commentators who were skeptical of this. Matt Sussman, Technorati Politics Channel editor, said one has to wonder if Republicans really believe all that. Granted, several of the questions are loaded, and Kos himself may be reading too much into the undecided pool, but the results are nonetheless startling. Darren Hutchinson, on his blog Dissenting Justice, says what's missing from the research is context. He says, quote, it does not provide comparative results for self-identified Democrats and independents. Oh, my God. So while Kos and many Daily Kos readers believe that the poll proves the extremism among Republicans, it's difficult to make this conclusion without comparative data, end quote. Boy, is this guy a jerk. Oh, my God, is he a jerk. What do you mean comparative data? If you ask a group of people, and they're all Republicans, whether or not they believe Obama is a Kenyan communist, it doesn't make any difference what Democrats think, you jerkwad. The question is addressed to Republicans. Oh, never mind. Newsweek's Katie Connolly wondered whether the sampling of participants was skewed. Now, you can find out by going to Daily Kos. For example, 83% of those polled said they were likely to vote this November. Oh, well, that skews the results, right, Katie? Demographic categories might not mean much when it comes to Republican voters. Polling guru Nate Silver was struck by the fact that on nearly every question, the results showed essentially no difference based on age, gender, race, or geography. Once we've established that you're a Republican, these differences seem to be rendered moot. The Republican base appears to be the same pretty much everywhere, which will be the party's greatest strength going into midterm elections. They will do what they are told. Oh, my God. Washington Post columnist Ezra Klein said there are a lot of possible explanations for why the poll numbers don't say what they seem to say. According to Ezra Klein, quote, maybe research 2000 sample is off. Maybe people don't really believe the answers they give to pollsters. Maybe they do believe these things, but don't take their own beliefs very seriously. But we'd all better hope it's a pretty good explanation, because these are the folks who choose the general election candidates for one of the country's two major parties. End quote. Oh, and Sarah Palin came out on top in a poll asking who the respondents would pick if the Republican presidential primary were held today. Sarah Palin came out on top with 16%. Mitt Romney came in second with 11%. Which sort of proves that Palin seems to have passed the qualifications test with self-identified Republicans, right? My God. My God. Scared yet? Scared yet? In today's, there's an op-ed piece in today's New York Times written by Robert Zaretsky about the Tea Party last time. And he talks about a movement in France in 1953 by, it was started, this is a teabagger, Pierre Puget. P-O-U-J-A-D-E. Pujade? Pujade, Kathy? How do you pronounce it? Pujade? Pujade? He was a... he had been a dock worker. He was a populist. And France, by 1953, ever since the country had been liberated in 1945, there was, as Zaretsky writes, a deep division down the middle of the French ideological spectrum. The Gaullists, that is Charles de Gaulle, and the Catholics are on one side, the communists and their fellow travelers on the other. The political center had evaporated in the as a result of the Cold War. The parliamentary system became ever more dysfunctional, lurching from one crisis to another as the competing parties accused one another of working against the interests of the man in the street. Blah, 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 blah. Neither the traditional left nor right seemed interested in the common person's plight. Inflation was everywhere. The influx of consumer and culture goods from America breathed warmly on the Frenchman, Frenchwoman's neck. So in the spread of all this anxiety, the professional political class seemed indifferent. And at this moment, Pierre Puget leapt onto the national stage. He was a stationer in Saint-Sally, a small town in southwestern France. He mobilized his fellow shopkeepers against government tax inspectors in 1953. He found a ready audience. Le Petit Commerçant was increasingly squeezed between the spread of chain stores and a heavy-handed state bureaucracy. Now, Monsieur Pujade, of course, was the recipient of many state benefits, from retirement pensions to health insurance, but never mind, so are some of the teabaggers in this country. The real France, he insisted, was not found in Paris, but in small towns and on farms. It was certainly not found in the person of France's most promising politician back then, Pierre Mendès France, remember him? Who, as prime minister, had acted on many of his campaign promises for meaningful economic and political change. He had done it. But you see, for Puget, the young and cerebral Mendès France, who was a Sephardic Jew whose family lived in France for several generations, he was and always would be a foreigner. He was Jewish. So, Monsieur Puget Monsieur Pierre Puget, put together something that we would call a teabagger movement. By January 24th, 1955, when the shopkeepers group that had been organized by Monsieur Puget staged its huge rally in Paris, the movement's nostalgic longing for a simpler time had veered toward violent anti-parliamentarianism. I'm going to finish this when we come back. You got to hear this. Stick around. Les passants dans la rue nous envient. C'est si bon de guetter dans ses yeux une espoir mêlée qui donnait la prise. C'est si bon, ces petites sensations, sa première communion. C'est tellement, tellement.
C'est bon, c'est bon.
Les passants dans la rue.
C'est bon, c'est bon.
Pas de sous, pas de sous.
C'est bon, c'est bon.
En chantant des chansons.
Radio matters here.
Tell me before the hour, Robert Zaretsky, in an op-ed piece in the New York Times today, he writes about teabaggers. The original teabaggers are not the people dressed up like engines and threw barrels of tea overboard in Boston Harbor. No. In 1953, in France, a guy named Pierre Puget, who was on the public dole but also owned a small business. He was a stationer. And he got tired of the taxes. He wanted all his benefits, but he got tired of the taxes, just like the teabaggers today, this Republican freak. So anyway, put together a movement. According to Zaretsky, he had a booming voice that amplified the anxiety of his populist followers. France's woes, he declared 50 years ago, were due to an urbane and urban professional class that had, quote, lost all contact with the real world, unquote. In his autobiography titled, I've Chosen to Fight, Puget styled himself as a simple man of the people who had entered politics for selfless and patriotic reasons. And the real France, he insisted, was not found in Paris, but in small towns and on farms, yada, yada, yada. He said that the people of France should be very suspicious of Pierre Mendès France, who was the prime minister at the time, because Mendès France was a Sephardic Jew whose family had lived in France for several generations, but would always be a foreigner. And then this. By January 24th, 1955, when the shopkeepers group staged its huge rally in Paris, the movement's nostalgic longing for a simpler time had veered toward violent anti-parliamentarianism. There were also overtones of anti-Americanism. Rumors flew that Coca-Cola had bought Notre Dame with the intention of turning its western facade into a billboard. And, of course, the usual anti-Semitism. The group's rallying cry, Sautez les sultans! Throw the bums out. Challenge the right as well as the left. During the subsequent national elections, the Pujadists bulldozed their way into town meetings, shouting down opposing candidates and threatening violence. A grim rehearsal, perhaps, for Tea Party tactics during last year's healthcare debates. Their tactics, if not their platform, they did not in fact have one, worked. Monsieur Puget's party won more than 10% of the votes, taking more than 50 seats in the French National Assembly. The election, though, proved to be Puget's swan song. He had demanded the nation's ear, but once he and his fellow deputies had it, they had nothing to say. Slogans and placards were poor preparation for governance, and the group's rank and file soon either retreated from the political arena or joined the traditional right wing. By 1958, most Pujadists were ready to throw their support behind a far more impressive opponent of the Fourth Republic, Charles de Gaulle. When de Gaulle assumed power and held a referendum that replaced the parliamentary system with an authoritarian executive, Puget's former adherents overwhelmingly voted yes. So, the teabaggers, although they don't know it, because they are abysmally stupid, they are dumber than dog droppings, but the teabaggers in this country actually are aligned with the dreaded French. Mon Dieu! No, I am with the French! How could this be? So every time Beck or any of these other swine address the crowds about the proud teabagger heritage, we go back to Boston Harbor. No, you don't, dummy. You go back to 1953, rural France, and Pierre Puget, who decided the time was right. But interesting, and this always happens with these right-wing cluster things. Once they get a chance to govern, they fall apart. They have no platform. Look at Sarah Palin as a classic example. How she got to be governor of Alaska, your guess is as good as mine. But she, what'd she do? Oh, okay, I'm going to go. Bye! Here, Lieutenant Governor, take over. See ya! Correction. The Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs in the Senate. It is the chief oversight committee for the United States. Senate. Senator Mary Landrieu, Louisiana, chairs the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee Disaster Recovery Subcommittee. She is not the chairperson of the Senate Homeland Security. She chairs one of the committees within it. The chairperson of the Senate Homeland Security Committee is 3, 2, 1, Joe Lieberman. Oh my God. Monsieur, I think we are all going, how do you say, crazy? Maybe. All right. We're going to take a break when we come back. Oh my God. What else we got? Still got more stuff here. I'm sorry. You're just going to have to hold your calls if you don't mind. Just a little bit more, and wait till I tell you what the IRS is doing. And a couple other items. And then we will take some phone calls on the last part of the program tonight. Are you having fun? Huh? Send me an email. Tell me if you're having fun tonight. All right? Come on. Send me an email. I want to hear what you think about, since I'm not opening up the phones yet, go ahead, send me an email. We'll be right back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. I forgot to give the website. I said, go get something to write with, and if you have it now. So you can get the full transcript of the House Homeland Security hearings on the 27th, where it was revealed that the State Department said, pull this guy's passport, and intelligence said, no, let him through. And you know what happened next. Here's the website, homeland.house.gov. Get that first, homeland.house.gov/hearings/index.asp? Capital I, capital D, equal 234. Okay, Homeland, and get it down, because if you send me an email later and say, oh, could you give that again, send me that, I'm just not going to have time, all right? homeland.house.gov/hearings/index.asp? 234. The Internal Revenue Service is buying shotguns. This is from their website. The Internal Revenue Service intends to purchase 60 Remington Model 870 Police RAMAC number 24587 12 gauge pump action shotguns for the Criminal Investigation Division. The Remington Parkerized shotguns with 14-inch barrel, modified choke, Wilson Combat Ghost Ring rear sight, and XS4 contour bead front sight, Knox reduced recoil adjustable stock, and speed feed ribbed black forend are designated as the only shotguns authorized for IRS duty based on compatibility with IRS existing shotgun inventory, certified armorer, and combat training and protocol maintenance and parts. By the way, a 14-inch barrel is illegal for us normals to own and use. Too short. God, IRS are buying 60 of them. IRS? Man, I'm glad I don't owe them any money. Over the weekend of September 13th and 14th, there was a conference on war crimes, which focused on ways to hold George W. Bush and his underlings accountable for the deaths of U.S. soldiers. Now, we reported this once, but somebody sent it to me again today. Author Vince Bugliosi made it achingly clear, at a special war crimes conference, that President George W. Bush should and can be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. Bugliosi made no overtures for trying the president in foreign tribunals. Rather, he said that Title 18 of the United States Code provides the essential legal framework for trying and convicting this president for what Bugliosi describes as nothing short of murder, for pushing the nation into a war under false pretenses, thereby bringing about what Bugliosi sees as the needless deaths of more than 4,000 soldiers killed in action and at least 100,000 innocent Iraqis who died horrible, violent deaths, as his book notes. Just thought I would toss that out there again. We're still waiting to see of all those books that copies of this book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder, that Bob Alexander and his crew sent out to every single county prosecutor in the United States from whose home district an American male or female had lost their lives in Iraq. And the book lays out the framework, legal and exact, how to prosecute Bush for murder. And the last I heard, Bob had been told out of, what did he send out? What was it, Kathy? 2,300? 2,800 books? It was a lot. And he did it because of donations from people who listen to this program. But the last I heard, there was one prosecutor who responded in a positive way. Some of them, I guess, responded in ways that we can't say on a family radio program. But of the ones that responded in a positive way, only one said, okay, we'll give it some thought. I'll get back to you in spring, March, April, sometime. We'll see. Do you know how infantile this country is? Do you want to know how infantile this country really is? Obama told a town hall meeting in New Hampshire. When was it? Yesterday, a day before. He was talking. He told a crowd of people there that here's what he said, quote, "You ought not blow a bunch of cash in Vegas when you're trying to save for college," end quote. That's what he said. You know, like what your mom would say to you, or your dad, or your accountant. You know, you ought not to blow a bunch of cash in Vegas when you're trying to save for college. There is the clarifying and qualifying phrase after "you ought not blow a bunch of cash in Vegas when you're trying to save for college." So what happened? The right-wing vermin in this country got a hold of that. Here's the full quote. "When times are tough, you tighten your belts. You don't go buying a boat when you can barely pay your mortgage. You don't blow a bunch of cash on Vegas when you're trying to save for college. You prioritize. You make tough choices. It's time your government did the same." Ta-da! A firestorm! Every member of Nevada's congressional delegation, which includes three Democrats, issued scathing statements lambasting Obama for discouraging tourism at a time when Las Vegas is among the nation's most economic depressed cities. Yeah, oh my God, oh my God, oh. Representative Shelley Berkeley, a Democrat whose district includes the Las Vegas Strip, said in an interview, quote, "I don't know if Obama has a problem with Las Vegas, but I have a problem with Obama. This is the second time he's made a comment that's harmful to the city of Las Vegas and the people I represent. It's incomprehensible to me that he should not only repeat the same mistake, but continue to insult the people and industry I represent." Harry Reid, Senate Majority Leader, issued a statement. Of course, Harry Reid's up for re-election, which I hope he gets beaten. He issued a statement saying he told the White House, "Well, the president needs to lay off Las Vegas and stop making it the poster child for where people shouldn't be spending their money." We are the dumbest collection of idiots ever assembled in one geographic area. So what did Obama say? He tried to back off. He said, what did he say? Oh no, I don't have what he said. Oh God. Las Vegas Mayor Oscar Goodman angrily demanded an apology. It's just astonishing. It's just astonishing. Well, who is this guy? Nevada Republican Party Chairwoman Sue Loudon said, "It's rather embarrassing when the President of the United States has to apologize to the Senate Majority Leader of his own party on White House stationery. Worse yet is when the apology is over a second round of disparaging comments about Nevada within the past year. Nevada families are struggling, and having the President against us doesn't help." Oh, my God. Another one bites the dust. Jerry Wonder, Prada. Another one bites the dust. Yo, cannabis, John Forte. Another one bites the dust. Yeah, Dirty Cash and Baby Three. Another one bites the dust. And another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust.
Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
Past the hour. Okay, some of you people are just lazy as hell. You really are. Okay, I'll put the link to the congressional hearings at MikeMalloy.com. I know I can do that. I get all these emails. Put it on your website. Post it. Okay. It's not that big of a link. You couldn't write it down? Okay, when the program's over tonight, we will post it so you can get a transcript of that hearing where the State Department and where it's revealed that the State Department asks that this guy's visa not be issued, Abdulmutallab, the Christmas bomber, and the intelligence organizations, people within the intelligence organizations who were planted there by the Republicans, by the Bush crime family, and who are trying to blow up the United States so that they can remove Barack Obama, they said, no, hey, listen, man, he's part of a bigger picture. Let him through. Let him through. Don't ask, don't tell. It looks like it's on his deathbed. Even former Secretary of State, former joint chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Colin Powell, weighed in today. All of a sudden, he's for it. He was against it, but now he's for it. Why is that, Colin? Well, things have changed. Things have changed since 1993. Yeah. They have, haven't they? But as Susan in Squim, Washington writes, Mike, could it be that McCain is so dementedly anti-gay because perhaps he was sexually abused during his time as a POW? I know that happens in prison situations, even among heterosexual males. I think he has not come to terms with a lot of his issues from those days because he thinks it's not manly to examine them. Just wondering, Susan in Squim, Washington. Yeah, everybody seems to be on board. Forget the Republicans. I mean, they're that stuff that you scrape off your shoes when you come in after walking your dog. But McCain, all of his betters in the military, people who got real commissions, people who, after earning the commissions, worked their way up to flag rank, they're all saying the same thing. And there squats old lumpy face himself. Wow, that queers in the military? Oh, no. Oh, I don't think so. Man, you know, they'll be wearing tattoos and stuff. And an earring. Jesus, God. And then I think this is the last thing. Rahm Emanuel and Sarah Palin and Rush Limbaugh, all linked by the word retarded. Only Emanuel used a modifier, effing retarded. And he was referring to liberal groups who opposed Obama's so-called health care reform plan, right? Rahm Emanuel referred to us as effing retarded. So, word got out after reporting the Wall Street Journal, of course, another Murdoch-owned piece of bathroom tissue. In a posting on Facebook, Sarah Palin says the language is not only caustic and crude, but deeply offensive to those with disabilities. She also compares the choice of words to that of the N-word in reference to African-Americans. Really? She wrote, quote, his recent tirade against participants in a strategy session was such a strong slap in many American faces that our president is doing himself a disservice by seeming to condone Rahm's recent sick and offensive tactic, end quote. Good God. She once again shamelessly uses her own child, Trigg, who was born with Down syndrome in April of 2008. She again thrusts her helpless child, because he's a child, not because he has Down syndrome. She thrusts her helpless child front and center once again, behind which stands big old bravo Sarah Palin. Listen, Sarah, if you really think that Rahm Emanuel should be removed as the chief of staff or whatever the hell he is for Obama, there are much better reasons than that. Besides, according to your almost son-in-law, you've used the term, and to today, Rush Limbaugh used it six times on his tacky little scum-sucking radio program. Are you now going to demand that Rush Limbaugh resign? No, you're not. Because you don't care, Sarah, about the use of the word retarded vis-a-vis your son. You just want to keep your pretty face out there so you can run for president. Yeah! Oh, by the way, Rahm Emanuel apologized for referring to liberals as retarded. He did. He called Tim Shriver, the CEO of the Special Olympics. Why him? Oh, well. Whatever. So Rahm Emanuel refers to us liberal Democrats as effing stupid and effing retarded. Okay. Well, remember that when your effing president seeks re-election. How's that, jerky boy? We'll be right back.
The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Break my stride. Make me smile. Every time I've cried.
25 before the hour. Thanks for the emails letting me know that you're being wildly entertained tonight. I get caught up in some of this madness and start taking it very seriously and forget that it's, you know, kind of a little bit a talk show. Talk show. All right. I've got to share with you a report from Prairie 2, our economic affairs correspondent, and then to your phone, to the phone calls. Prairie 2 writes, juggling eggs. He writes, President Obama has proposed recycling $30 billion TARP dollars from the big banks into small business loans. The Republicans are outraged that the government is putting money into community banks for lending and not applying it to the debt they left behind. The TARP was supposed to unfreeze the credit market, and of course it has not. Every Friday, more small banks are seized as insolvent. Last week's batch included six banks, bank chains, and will cost about $2 billion to dispose of. The FDIC is predicting they will spend at least $100 billion by the end of this year cleaning up the first banking collapse of the new American century, a brand the Republicans so smugly attached to it when it looked like their empire would never end. Indeed, if you are part of the 0.1% at the top, you're still doing just fine. Rank-and-file Republicans that once enjoyed a six-figure income and now have none are angry and confused, even more than normal. Back to that debt the Republicans left behind. Congress has authorized another $2 trillion that they hope will last past the election. The debt has already passed $12 trillion on its way to $14 trillion by year's end and is a ticking bomb in its own right. Not that the amount is unmanageable, but that the Bush crime family has replaced much of the long-term bonds with 90-day notes. Clinton had replaced all the short-term notes with 10-year bonds with the intention that they would be paid off by the end of President Gore's second term. That would make sure that Social Security would not be a problem as the baby boomers began to retire. Tomorrow's announcement of Treasury bond reissue auction for next week is expected to drive the stock market either up or down, nobody knows which. The government has been selling its debt so cheap in the last couple of years that they have, in effect, been making money as people are paying more than face value for short-term notes. If this were to change, you could easily add another $500 billion to the federal budget without interest going above the normal rate. Higher rates, like we've seen in the past, could put the amount for interest past a trillion. It would become necessary to sell more bonds just to keep up with the interest. Of course, that would quickly put everything into a tailspin. The money simply doesn't exist. Obama is juggling eggs, and the Republicans are throwing them. PrairieNumeral2.com. Thank you, Bruce. Nobody wants to talk? Really? Okay. Well, we have John. We tricked one guy into calling in. John is listening in Minneapolis to KTNF. Hey, John. Hey, John.
Yeah. I'll play game of connect dots with you.
Okay.
Okay. We have Supreme Court ruling in favor of corporations on free speech. We got corporates in Congress ruling against Sheikh Mohammed's public trial in New York. We have a deal signed between talked about between the United States and Taiwan. Now, with results you gave me on the House investigation, plus the naming of the date of December 2012 as the end of the world, what does this all add up to?
I don't know. Partridge in a pear tree or something. I have no idea. Listen, John, your phone connection is really rancid. A lot of noise in the background, a lot of static. I'm sorry, it just didn't quite make it through tonight. Thanks, John. Appreciate it, though. Maybe another time, all right? Oh, yeah. An atheist public policy group. That would be American Atheists Incorporated. Today, join the call for President Obama and key members of the U.S. Congress not to attend tomorrow's National Prayer Breakfast. Dr. Ed Buckner, president of the American Atheist, said his group is joining with other organizations in protesting the event hosted by the Shadowy Fellowship Foundation. According to investigative journalist Jeff Charlotte, author of The Family, the foundation spent nearly $1 million per year staging the prayer event. It also operates the notorious House on C Street, which has been linked to a number of political scandals and other alleged improprieties. Buckner said, quote, we're urging President Obama, Senator Harry Reid, and other key political figures to boycott the event. The Family is a secret manipulative group that some are describing as a cult, which tries to conceal its political influence, financial holdings, and public policy initiatives, and on and on and on. The Family, of course, is behind that Uganda initiative, which would mandate the death penalty for a gay folk. Jesus, God. Dave Silberman, Vice President and Communications Director for American Atheists, noted, President Obama and members of Congress have every right to be religious, but we want them to uphold the First Amendment separation of church and state and avoid the appearance of officially endorsing a particular religion or religion in general. Yeah, AmericanAtheists.org. You've got to go to their website. It is one of the most enlightening websites you'll ever go to, because it is not corrupted with fairy tales and superstitions. It's very interesting. Very interesting. John is in Chandler, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, John.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. Hey, I have a question.
Yeah.
The U.S. dollar's purchasing power, I guess, has gone down quite a bit. I keep hearing that the Chinese currency, the yuan, mm-hmm. is undervalued. I was wondering, is the Chinese government and the U.S. government, do they agree on the value of the yuan? Is that how it works? Because I think it's not a freely floating currency.
The Chinese have tied it to the U.S. dollar. And as a result, with the dollar losing value globally, it has devalued the Chinese yuan. Yuan, however the hell you pronounce it. And Prairie, too, could explain this a lot better than I am. But with the Chinese currency that devalued, it simply means that their exports are a lot cheaper on the world market than the exports of other countries, which has the net effect of dumping, if you're familiar with that term, where a country takes products that might sell on the global market, say, for $10 and puts them on the global market for $8. Well, obviously, people are going to go for the $8 item rather than the $10 item. If the $8 item is produced in China and the $10 item is produced in Germany, guess who loses and guess who wins? So it's my understanding, and I certainly, you know, this is the dismal science to me, but it's my understanding that because the yuan is so undervalued, because it's been tied to the American dollar, it is fueling this global financial meltdown. The Chinese are doing just fine, thank you very much, but it is dragging down the economies of other countries to the point where Greece is ready to default. It would on its international debt would be the first NATO country to default. Spain right now is dealing with an unemployment rate hovering around 40%. Member states in the European Union, it's also my understanding, are in crisis mode. There are several of them. They don't know whether to wet themselves or run hysterically into the woods.
I was wondering, to hedge myself, I have some money saved up. To hedge myself, I guess there's different ways you could do it. You could maybe purchase tangible assets like gold, but could you also exchange that money for Chinese yuan?
I have no idea. I don't know what the U.S. currency laws are all about. I know there are websites where you can get involved in currency trading. Be very careful if you do that because you can really get, you know, bounced. I don't know what to tell you. I really don't.
In addition to China, do you know any other countries which are not in debt, in which are financial debt?
Venezuela.
Venezuela?
I guess. I really don't know. I'll tell you what, do. Go to Prairie 2's website, our economic affairs correspondent, Prairie 2. His website is prairie2.com.
Okay.
And maybe send him an email. Ask him. He has all these answers. I couldn't, anything I say would be sound incredibly stupid and also incredibly misleading. But thanks, John. I appreciate you checking in. That's why we have an economic affairs correspondent, an education affairs correspondent, a military affairs correspondent, because those people have the answers. I just sit here and pretend like I know what I'm talking about. Tom is in El Monte, California. Hey, Tom.
Yeah, hey, Mike. I called in before concerning trying to get a bunch of people to march on Washington.
Yeah.
Your advice to me was that I need to get a website, organize, stuff like that.
Yeah, hey, I'll tell you what, hold on a second. There goes the music. I got a break. Hold on, I'll come right back, Tom. Talking with Dave in Minneapolis. All right, Dave, where were we?
You were talking about how Greece is about to tank, and I'm thinking that the IMF is probably salivating over this possibility of walking in and taking over, like they've done in other places, social policy and all the other things that go along with it, and more or less put the common people in their little feudal spots in the world and take over the rest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. I'm looking at some stuff on the HAARP.
Oh yeah, the
HAARP.
The weather changing vibrations pounding earthquake thingy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen that?
You know, I have not really gone to some of the websites yet that people have, to which people have sent me links, you know, to, I'm not even sure. And if you want to send me a link, I'll check it out. I'm not even sure what the hell this is. It's some kind of a weather altering weapon or something. There's no point in trying to.
Well, it's more than that. I did send you a link just a little bit ago.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. And, that's one of, many. But it was used, developed for, oil and gas exploration. And in one of these videos, one of these engineers explains how he's in Washington State. He actually triggered an earthquake up there with this little 30-watt powered HAARP device, you know, while he was looking for, oil and gas deposits.
Yeah.
You know, and the energy he put in the ground with this little device managed to set off a small earthquake up there. So, and then there's a bunch of other little videos to look at there that are kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, send it to me again.
Yeah, okay. I'll resend her.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
All right, Dave. Take care. Were we talking with Tom earlier? I think we were. Hey, Tom.
Yeah, hey, I thought you forgot me.
I did for a minute. I'm sorry. God.
I called before. I was trying to, I had a goal or a dream of getting a bunch of people together, even 100 march on Washington.
Right.
Well, since I've talked to you about that, and your advice was for me to get a website.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I talked to a bunch of my friends, and it looks a little bit overwhelming for me. I don't need to be a weenie, but reality is it's kind of overwhelming. But I'm hearing a lot of people from a lot of other stations. I listen to progressive radio from, you know, all over the country.
Right.
And it seems like, you know, I'm not the only one.
Right.
And so I think there's a movement going on there. I mean, we're talking about movement. I mean, I'm kind of a cross between movement, politics, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just, I hate Republicans.
Right, right.
I'm kind of halfway in between there.
Yeah.
So, I want to know if you've heard anything, and possibly by me talking to you, maybe one of your listeners out there.
Are you there, Tom?
Yeah, I'm there. Okay. You hit me on the head with that big gong. Why'd you do that?
Did that come from this end? No, I haven't heard a word. I'll tell you something. I'm sure that there is activity going on somewhere in the United States regarding resistance to what is happening. But apparently I am so out of the loop that I don't know. There was a time, and it was a long time ago, when there wasn't too much that happened in the resistance community, the anti-war community, the student movement, that I wasn't fully aware of, partly because I was active in it, but also because that's the main reason. I mean, if you're active in it, you know what's going on, and you know who to contact and where. It was easy back then to go to just about any major city in the United States. It was easy for me to go to any city in the United States, and within 30 minutes of getting there, hook up with the right people. So I'm sure but that was then. This is now. That was during my time. This is somebody else's time. I'm waiting to be led. I am more than willing to acknowledge that my generation has stepped aside for the most part and follow new leaders. That's what it takes, is that kind of energy. But because I am so totally out of the loop at this point, as are a lot of people in my cohort, there's no telling what is going on. I stay in touch with a few hardline progressives who refuse to give it up. liberals, I mean, real ass kickers from the 60s and 70s who will be that way until they're stuffed into a coffin or a body bag someplace, and bless their hearts for it. But if I do hear something, I'll certainly pass it on or let people who listen to this program know what I have heard. Tom, I have to leave it there. We're just flat out of time here. You know, there's a time to be part of the leadership, and there's a time to step aside and let new energy, new blood, new focus, new objectives, although the objectives are pretty much the same, have their shot. I think there's nothing worse. I know we felt this in the 60s and 70s, and the old-line radicals that wouldn't get the hell out of the way. Okay, you had your chance in the 30s, in the 40s, in the 50s. Now step aside. It's a new generation. You've got to step out of the way. And, you know, for the most part, that occurred. And now all of a sudden, that's me. So anyway, thanks for hanging out tonight. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Are you burdened?